It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show,
Mickey Rooney did finally speak up and get some assistance, and back on March the 2nd of this year, he spoke before the Senate Special Committee on Aging and explained what had happened to him and was basically asking the Senate committee to provide funding for the Elder Justice Act, because the act has been passed, but no money has been appropriated to be able to provide the services that the act would provide.
Ann C., with the Greater Augusta Coalition Against Adult Abuse, talks about the campaign for federal funding for the Elder Justice Act. And during this week's question and answer session, you'll learn when you can pay your rent late and stay, and when you can't. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 131, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. On June 17, the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Sean Donovan, issued a letter to all public housing authorities asking them to become more flexible in allowing residents by ex-offenders. The letter observes that each year, 500,000 people are released from prison and 7 million more are released from jail. The majority of people released from prison intend to return to their families, many of whom live in public housing. The letter explains that there are only two explicit bans on occupancy based on criminal activity: a lifetime ban on those who manufactured methamphetamine on the premises of federally subsidized housing, and sex offenders subject to a lifetime registration requirement. In addition, public housing admission is prohibited for people currently engaged in illegal drug use. In all other cases, the letter notes that public housing agencies have broad discretion to set admission and termination policies and should consider evidence of rehabilitation and other factors showing a reasonable probability of favorable future conduct. The letter states that this is an administration that believes in second chances and that people who have paid their debt to society deserve the opportunity to gain access to one of the more fundamental building blocks of a stable life, a place to live. In other news, in a 5-4 ruling last month, the United States Supreme Court held that an indigent defendant in a civil contempt proceeding for non-payment of child support, where the defendant is faced with possible incarceration, is not entitled to a court-appointed attorney in each case, but must receive certain procedural safeguards. Michael Turner was jailed 6 times between 2003 and 2010 for terms ranging from 1 day to 8 months due to child support arrears. In 2008, 11 million U.S. child support cases had arrears due, and an estimated 50,000 people are kept in jail on any given day for child support arrears. Although court-appointed counsel is not required in each case, the Supreme Court held that the state must provide procedures to ensure a fair determination. These procedures include: notice that ability to pay is critical to the case, the use of a form to elicit relevant financial information, and an opportunity at the civil contempt hearing to respond to questions about financial circumstances. since Turner did not have clear notice that ability to pay would be the critical question in the proceeding, and was not provided with information that would have allowed him to disclose such information, the state court erred in finding him able to pay, and thus in civil contempt. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Kennedy's Piggly Wiggly Stores versus Cooper. Walter Cooper worked for the store for nearly 20 years before suffering a back injury and depression. At a meeting to determine whether he could return to work, the issue of union organizing activities arose. Mr. Cooper said that if employees didn't go for union representation, it was because they feared losing their jobs. The CEO told Mr. Cooper that he would lose his job if he didn't do what he was told. Mr. Cooper told the CEO that he was full of a vulgar word for excrement, and he was fired. Unemployment compensation was denied, but both the Circuit Court and the Court of Appeals reversed. The courts felt that a single instance of vulgar language was not willful misconduct, especially because Mr. Cooper had no record of misconduct in 20 years, and there was no evidence the comments disrupted store business. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault. And Kennedy's Piggly Wiggly Stores versus Cooper is this week's case that changed the Commonwealth.
It's time for our weekly question and answer session. We're here in the studio, and we have a questioner with a question. Please give us your name and where you're from.
Effie from Sandston.
Well, thank you for being on the show. What's your question for us?
My question is, if you receive an eviction from a landlord and you pay the balance in full prior to your eviction, does the landlord have the right to still evict you if they accept your payment?
Effie, that's a great question. And we get that question probably a dozen or more times a week. Virginia law gives you three opportunities to pay your rent late and stay. The first is within any grace period of your lease. And you can do that any number of times. The second is within any five-day pay or quit period. And again, you can do that any number of times. The third is if your landlord files an unlawful detainer or an eviction case in court, you can stay if you pay everything you owe, the rent, any late fees called for in a lease, any attorney's fees called for in a lease if there's an attorney involved, and the court costs, if you do that no later than the first court date. If you do that, then the case has to be dismissed as paid. Although I always urge people to go to court anyway and stand in front of the clerk or the judge and make sure that the case is dismissed as paid. The landlord has no choice in the matter. The judge has no choice in the matter. However, you can only do that once in any 12-month period of time. The second time within a 12-month period of time that you try to do that, the landlord can accept your money and still go to court. And even though you pay it in full, the landlord can get a judgment of possession only. Now, once a judgment of possession has been entered, whether it's the first time or the second time or the third time, that judgment of possession is good for one full year, and the landlord can keep that hanging over the tenant for one full year, and the landlord can accept the tenant's rent payment in full and still evict the tenant as long as the landlord within 5 business days, which can be as much as 7 or 8 calendar days, gives the tenant what's called a written notice accepting the money, quote, with reservation. And that means the landlord is keeping or reserving the right to take your money and go ahead and evict you anyway. And we see a lot of tenants who believe, unfortunately, quite mistakenly, that as long as they pay in full before the actual eviction by the sheriff takes place, that they get to stay. And unfortunately, that's not true in Virginia law. Unfortunately, under Virginia law, if the landlord takes those payments after the judgment and within 5 business days of each payment gives you a written notice saying, I'm reserving the right to go ahead and evict you, the landlord can go ahead and do that. The only other thing that would save a tenant in that situation would be if you paid the judgment in full and you entered a new lease. And in that situation, the new lease creates a new tenancy, which replaces the old lease and the old tenancy upon which the judgment of possession was based. But other than that, if the landlord takes your money and doesn't make any mistakes, that eviction can be hanging over your head for a whole year. Does that pretty much explain what the law is in this area?
Yes, it does.
Okay, well, thank you very much for being on the show. We're here at the Charlottesville office of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society, and we're speaking with Ann C. She's a paralegal with the Greater Augusta Coalition Against Adult Abuse, and we are going to be speaking about elder abuse. Welcome to the show, Ann.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Could you tell us and our listeners briefly, what is elder abuse?
Elder abuse is the intentional or neglectful acts of a caregiver or trusted individual to a vulnerable adult. And it can include physical or emotional abuse. It can include neglect or self-neglect by the individual or financial exploitation.
So let's go through those types sort of one after the other and delve into what they mean. The last one you mentioned was financial exploitation. What are the types of things that can happen to elders that will cause them to be exploited financially?
Often with older people, they may not be able to manage their money any longer, and so may have to give it the power to do that to someone else. And usually it's a trusted individual, even a family member. And, you know, sometimes the family member or whoever is handling their money does not do a good job. It may not necessarily be intentional, but they do sometimes misuse their money. And sometimes it is intentional. Other times they may have different opinions about how the money should be used. But we also have situations where undue influence is used for vulnerable adults to sign over their home to another person. For example, someone may say, Dad, if you sign your house over to me, I'll come and live with you and take care of you the rest of your life. And there have been times when that happens, and then they don't come live with them, or they do, but they don't take care of them. And I've even had situations where they refuse to let the person continue to live there.
Now, you mentioned neglect as well as self-neglect. What do we mean by those terms?
Okay, well, neglect is when someone needs some type of physical assistance. And as far as their care goes, maybe they need help with bathing, or they need help taking their medication, or even help cleaning so that they're in a sanitary living situation. And sometimes that doesn't happen. And that sometimes is a paid caregiver, or it can be a family member or friend. Self-neglect is when the individual themselves refuses to accept needed treatment. For example, they may have an injury, let's say on their foot, and it may even be starting to turn black, and they're refusing to go to the doctor. That's what we would consider self-neglect.
And then the last type you mentioned was abuse, both physical and emotional abuse. What type of things are we talking about there?
with physical abuse, that could be hitting or any type of striking of the individual. The mental abuse can just be, could even be like bullying and, you know, refusing to let them do what they want to do, or talking back to them, any number of different things where they're affecting their ability to enjoy their life.
Now, how common is adult abuse of the various types that you've described?
There have been studies, but it's an under-recognized problem. One study that I've seen says that 1 in 10 older adults are victims of abuse. Research indicates that 1 in 5 cases of abuse are reported.
So it's a big undiscovered problem out there. What are some of the warning signs of adult abuse or elder abuse that people might want to be on the lookout for?
Some common signs of abuse would be, you know, burns like cigarette burns or welts, unexplained bruises, scratches, cuts, any of that type of thing, fractures, dislocated joints, sprains. The person might be restrained. They're, you know, in a wheelchair and tied to the chair or the bed and they can't get up. They may be in unsanitary or unsafe housing. They don't have the proper clothing that they need. They may be malnourished or dehydrated. They may have untreated medical conditions. They don't have the medicines they need. They don't have their dentures or their eyeglasses or access to a telephone. And then financially, you know, they may have items that are missing, or they don't receive their Social Security check for some reason, or their checks are missing. Or sometimes when an older person will, for some reason out of the blue, suddenly change their will or their power of attorney. Another financial thing to look for is whether their bills are getting paid. All of these types of things are signs and indicators of abuse.
So what should people do if they suspect that an elder person is being abused?
They should contact Adult Protective Services, which is part of the local social services office. There is a toll-free 24-hour, 7-day-a-week hotline that people can call. The number is 1-888-83-ADULT, or they can call their local social service office. And Adult Protective Services will then go out and investigate the situation.
Now, I gather that up until now, adult abuse, elder abuse has been pretty much a state concern, and the federal government really has not been involved. But I gather that that changed last year with the passage of the Elder Justice Act, which was part of the health care reform bill. Can you tell our listeners what the Elder Justice Act is and what it may do in the future?
The Elder Justice Act, for the first time, would bring national funding to help the victims of elder abuse. Specifically, it would provide funding for Adult Protective Services. Adult Protective Services is mandated. For example, in the state of Virginia, it's a mandated service, but the state of Virginia has not given any money toward Adult Protective Services. And so with the Elder Justice Act, there would be federal money that would be given to the local Adult Protective Services. It would also provide additional funding for ombudsmen, long-term care ombudsmen, who investigate abuse and neglect in nursing homes and assisted living facilities and home health agencies. It would provide funding for additional training for those who inspect and license nursing homes. There are just a number of different types of things that they're planning to do with the money that would really help the situation.
Now, I gather that one of the things that shine a spotlight on elder abuse has been the story of Mickey Rooney, who was a child actor and then became an adult actor and, like all of us, became elderly. Could you share with us the Mickey Rooney story?
Apparently, Mickey Rooney was in a situation where other people were mishandling his money. And I believe it was a family member, and I think it was a very embarrassing situation for him and his family, and he felt trapped and unable to really do anything about it. He did finally speak up and get some assistance, and back on March the 2nd of this year, he spoke before the Senate Special Committee on Aging and explained what had happened to him and was basically asking the Senate committee to provide funding for the Elder Justice Act, because the act has been passed, but no money has been appropriated to be able to provide the services that the act would provide.
And I gather this has led to a campaign called the It Could Happen to Anyone campaign.
Toward the latter part of July, the committee that will be looking at appropriating money for the Elder Justice Act will be meeting. And the Center on Excellence on Elder Abuse and Neglect in California, the Elder Justice Coalition, and the National Adult Protective Services Association have started this campaign where they have developed these postcards that say on the front, if elder abuse happened to me, Mickey Rooney, it can happen to anyone. And basically, they're asking people who agree that funding should be appropriated for the Elder Justice Act to sign this card. And then they are going to be sent back to the national agencies that are doing this, and they are going to present them in bulk all at one time to the committee that will be looking at this issue.
And how many postcards is the coalition trying to gather, and by what date are they hoping to gather them by?
Nationally, they're hoping to have 20,000 postcards signed from all over the country. Locally, our coalition, you can only get up to 250 cards individually. So I personally have 250 postcards that I'm going to try to get people to sign. All of the postcards need to be returned by July 15th to the Elder Justice Coalition in Washington. The cards are not meant to be given to someone and for that individual person to send it in. It's meant for that person to give it back so that they can be sent in bulk. Cards are still available. I have some cards myself that people would like to contact me if they're interested in either getting cards to have other people to sign, or if they're interested in signing a card, they can contact me.
And what would be the contact information for you? How would you best want people to get in touch with you if they were so inclined?
My office has a toll-free number where you can reach me, and that number is 800-237-0141. The coalition does have a website, www.gacaaa.com, Greater Augusta Coalition Against Abuse. We don't have the postcard information on there yet, but it does have the phone number on there to contact me, and also my email address if people would like to email me about this.
Okay, very good. We have been speaking with paralegal Ann C., who is with the Greater Augusta Coalition Against Adult Abuse, and we have been speaking about elder abuse, how prevalent it is, and a new federal statute that was authorized last year to provide funding for anti-elder abuse campaigns, and a current campaign called the It Could Happen to Anyone campaign that is trying to get the Act Fund. Thank you so much for being on the show, Ann.
Thank you.
This week's Strange But True Law is from Title 18.2, which deals with the crimes and offenses. Under Code of Virginia 18.2-293.1, Virginia law allows the possession of a machine gun for scientific purposes or the possession of a machine gun not usable as a weapon, or the possession of a machine gun for a purpose manifestly not aggressive or offensive, provided the machine gun is registered with the Department of State Police within 24 hours after its acquisition, or in the case of a semi-automatic weapon, within 24 hours after it is converted into a machine gun. However, under the Federal Firearm Owners Protection Act of 1986, sales of all machine guns manufactured or registered after May 1986 were restricted to federally licensed dealers who could only sell them to government agency or police departments. As a result, Federal law makes it illegal to transfer ownership of a new machine gun to a private individual. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral four, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegebright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Since regulations started on October 1, 2010, unlicensed car title lenders have made thousands of illegal car title loans in Virginia. Join us next week when Jay Spear, Executive Director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center, tells us who the bad guys are and who to contact for help. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegebright.